Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
My name is Anna Moss. I'm in New Orleans at my house. And I could only hope that my art can make other people feel the way that I feel when I listen to some of my favorite musicians.
I got that big dick energy, I need everyone to know. I got that big dick energy, I need everyone to know. Play super loud and fast. Were you also playing too? I couldn't hear you, I was busy playing loud and fast with my big dick energy.
This is a rare first ever interview in New Orleans. I've been here with some friends and the baby, and I've become newly obsessed with your music. Anyone who has been listening to anything I've been doing the last 3 months is I've probably heard your song, Big Dick Energy, 5 to 8 times. My song of the year. I'm not saying that everyone needs Big Dick Energy, but everyone needs the confidence to feel like they have Big Dick Energy.
Sure.
What is it? What does Big Dick Energy mean to you, Anna?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. The actual term, Big Dick Energy, is a positive thing. It means having the innate confidence and not having to outwardly be a jerk to people because you are confident in yourself. So you're just being like a nice, kind person. It's almost like the divine masculine.
Well, you heard the lady. We are putting out all sorts of big energy today here on the Show on the Road podcast. Thank you for being with me. This was a very special talk I was able to have right on Frenchman Street at Anna Moss's house in New Orleans. Finding this song at the end of last year was kind of like opening a portal into a special new universe where someone like Anna and her band Handmade Moments exist. And rarely does a song make me laugh out loud and then dance to a flute solo and then sucker punch me in the gut because I realize that she's turning this fear on its head that so many women have about being able to take up space in the world. It's a hard number to reckon with, but 1 in 3 women in the United States will experience physical or sexual violence during their lifetimes. And maybe a cheeky song like this won't change things right away, but I think if you listen to Anna and how thoughtful she is in her music and in her life, you'll want to know a lot more.
To know I got a big old dick.
Well, the video for Big Dick Energy is really fun. You know, it's sort of turning the relentless pursuit of the female body on its head, where you guys are chasing this shirtless guy through the street.
Yeah.
And he's, like, trying to hide behind trees.
Yeah, the goal of the video was to reverse the gender roles and to paint a paint a description of what it would be like if men were constantly being objectified by women, not seen for the person that they are, but just for them themselves as sexual objects. If men were just being chased on the streets when they're just trying to like go jogging or do any kind of exercise. If men were constantly being catcalled and just terrified for their lives.
I think you're going for some comedy in the video, but I think the more serious viewpoint of it is that like women have had to deal with this for thousands of years, maybe. I mean, we're cavemen catcalling cave women, maybe. But
sure.
Like the idea that men can be objectified and mocked and made to feel small is not ever usually something that happens, you know? And I think you talk about in an Instagram post about taking up space and saying like, no, we're going to like be powerful and fuck shit up, you know? And
yeah.
Like, why can't we do that?
Well, we can, and we are. We are.
Would you describe your solo stuff as maybe more soul, funk, rock and roll based than Handmade Moments, the group thing you've been doing a while, or is it just sort of an extension of what you're already doing?
I think the main difference between the two projects is Handmade Moments is an acoustic project where we play all acoustic instruments. I mostly play alto sax and bass clarinet and upright bass in Handmade Moments. Joel plays guitar and mandolin, and we both beatbox and sing, and he plays tuba. And it's like folk and soul and just very all over the place, super political. But my project, I would call it bedroom pop. It's electronic. I mean, it's not electronic. It's electric. I play electric guitar, drummer, keys, some flutes, electric bass. But I only just play guitar and sing.
Are you and Joel both from Arkansas originally?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fayetteville? Or...
Well, I'm originally from Eureka Springs area, okay, which is in the Ozarks, and then Joel is from Conway, which is near Little Rock.
You know, it's interesting. That's, like, one part of this country that our group, Dust Bowl Revival, has been, like, somehow absent from, or we haven't ever gotten a show, or no one's given us a chance to go through there. And I know this scene in Tulsa and Fayetteville is really cool. Just, it hasn't ever really happened. Do you go back there often to play, or it's been a while?
We do. We go back there usually once or twice a year. It's not necessarily on the way to anywhere,
yeah,
which is probably why you've never been. It's like you'd have to be going there to go there. Arkansas is what's called a flyover state. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But yeah, it's not always on everyone's radar.
I think my goal this year is to try to bring at least my music to places that we haven't been in a way, because I think there's so many markets. Like, how many times are we going to play, like, no offense, like Cleveland or Columbus, you know, these places that we're always going through.
Right.
And what about Arkansas? What about Idaho? What about Alaska? You know, the few times we've been to like Alaska, even in the middle of the winter, it was incredible.
I want to go to Alaska.
I know. It's so cool up there. And people are so appreciative that you're there.
Yeah.
You know? You know, you play New York or even L.A. where we're from. People are like, oh, yeah, well, you'll be back.
We'll catch the next show.
Yeah.
I really like playing in Minnesota for that reason. Minneapolis is such a cool city. People are just like, thank you for coming. I would never miss a show.
Yeah.
Here's a rhubarb pie.
I was digging that, the song from 2022, Hole in the Ocean, that Handmade Moments put out. You know, obviously climate change and man, what's happening to our earth is affecting New Orleans directly in a very real, scary way. You weren't here during Katrina yet, were you?
I wasn't here during Katrina, but I was here during Zeta and Ida.
What is it like being here during a storm?
It's wild. I was looking forward to it. I was here for Hurricane Zeta. I was home alone. Joel was out of town, and I was home alone, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. I have all these candles. I have candles of all the colors of the rainbow, and I'm like, I'm going to light my candles. I'm going to play guitar by candlelight. It's going to be sweet. I got water. I got everything I need. And then it happened, and it was terrifying. And then the power's out for a long time. And cell phones don't work because the cell phone towers go down.
Oh, shit.
And so it feels, on top of the fact that there's just massive destruction and, like, you don't know what's going on and you hope everyone's okay. And there's, of course, flooding. That's scary. You can't really go anywhere. But on top of that, then it's just very, it feels very lawless. Mm. Anything could happen and you can't call anybody.
Mm.
Anything could happen and no one's going to help you. You can't reach anyone.
Mm.
You're just on your own and it's dark and you're just like, whoa.
Did you see, like, people start to, like, take the law into their own hands? Or, like, was it, I mean, it probably wasn't as bad as Katrina, but, like, it's like you watch stuff on TV. It's happening in Northern California right now. Like,
really?
Like, Sacramento's, like, underwater.
Jeez,
you know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard to try to just live your regular life when there's no stores, you can't get to the hospital, you can't,
right,
you know, get food. So
that's,
it's like,
a scary
it's
thing.
Almost like you have to start being lawless in a way.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I didn't experience anything like that firsthand. I just stayed in my house. Thankfully, I'm in good health, so I don't need to go to the hospital or anything. But if I had to, it would have been impossible. You know, so that's a scary thought of just knowing that there's no help and no one's going to come.
Yeah, that there's some really cool rhymes in that Hole in the Ocean song. You know, the coastline's receding, retreating, it's fleeting before we can kill it. But that idea of that we're like a junkie that keeps stealing from mom, from the mother,
yeah,
you know, and keep asking for more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hole in the ocean, it's growing, and no one knows quite how to feel it. The coastline's receding, retreating, it's fleeting before we can kill it.
Like, there's so many things that you can do. Even, like, as a band, air travel constantly is, like,
sure, yeah,
a very strange vice that you can't get rid of.
Yeah,
you know,
you have to do it. And it's not like the science isn't there.
Yeah.
The science is there for regenerative power and agriculture and everything. It's just not profitable in capitalism. And that is the sad part.
Now, bombs fall on mothers and brothers and lovers in faraway places. We just see prophets, not coffins, or horror on orphan girls' faces. A compliant, reliant, complacent, racist, amused population. Fed on fear, repetition, to condition visions of violence and nation.
You experienced, unfortunately, firsthand the risk of taking those long van rides from show to show, you know, the really scary crash that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that maybe after that you would stop touring for a while, or did it never cross your mind?
Never crossed my mind. But it was a freak accident. It was like, I don't know if you read about our accident, but we were on the 49, leaving Grass Valley, California, on a two-lane highway where every couple miles a passing lane opens. And coming the opposite way were two cars that were merging back into one lane, and they were fighting over who was going to be in front.
Mm.
And then they crashed into each other, lost control, came into our lane,
yeah,
hit us head on. Which goes to show, it doesn't matter, like, how good of a driver,
yeah,
you are. It was like 2 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah.
It was sun shining. There was no rain. It wasn't bad weather conditions. You could be having the best day ever, best driving conditions, and some people could just crash into you. You know, you just never know what's going to happen. It's always a risk. That's why we try to take the train as much as possible.
Oh, sweet.
We're taking the train this year a few times on our tour, and it's so amazing.
Oh, Amtrak.
We're actually heading to Washington, D.C.
Mm.
From here, from New Orleans, in a few months.
How long does that take? 3 days?
No, it takes one day.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I guess overnight.
But we get a sleeper car. You get to eat three meals a day at the restaurant. There's showers. You can just play guitar in the observation car, which is like a car of all windows. And it's so relaxing. It's so
It reminds relaxing. Me of the that run I was mentioning we did in Alaska where we had to take 10-hour ferries to a
that.
Couple of like outlying islands.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. It's going to be really boring. Because the weather was like pretty bleak. It wasn't like bright sunshiny days. But it was like such a relaxing, calming thing where you and then you saw like whales and the sun came out and the icebergs are like glittering, you know.
You're like icebergs.
And I was like, man, I wish it was like 20 hours long.
I know. Honestly, people don't think about it because we're always trying to save time, you know. But 12 hours on a train or 24 hours on a train is so nice, or on a ferry is so nice. Whereas 24-hour traveling by plane or car is the worst. You feel it on your body.
Yeah.
You're all crunched up because when you're driving, you have to be so present when you're behind the wheel. You can't really relax, you know. And when you're flying, you're in your tiny little seat. You have to, like, climb over people, go to the bathroom. It's just a mess, you know. But on the train, you can walk around, stretch. You can drink tea all day, drink wine. It's awesome.
I feel like that song you did, Slow Down Kamikaze, would be nice on a lazy train ride.
Oh, yeah. That's my vibe these days.
Just trying to slow down. Just let it all flow. Tell me a little more about that song. That's that part where you keep saying, I was invisible. It kept sticking with me.
Well, that part of the song is about a dream I had where I got to go to Iran. I've always wanted to go to Iran and like Iraq and see all of the old temples and just like the cradle of our civilization. Mm. It's all over there. But as an American citizen, it would be really difficult for me to go over there.
Yeah.
It's not safe. But I had this dream that I went there, but I was invisible. So no one could see me. And I was free. And I could walk around. And I could do. And I could just look at all the beautiful things. And no one's going to like bother me or harass me or try to kill me because I'm invisible. And that's always a secret power. Like when I was a little kid, when people like, if you could have one secret power, what would it be? The one that I always wanted was to be invisible. Just so I could go anywhere and see anything and no one's going to like... Because it is different to be in a woman body.
It's very dangerous over there right now.
You can't...
Horrifying.
You can't just be, you know? And it's like that anywhere. People always see you and like want to interact with you or expect something from you or whatever it might be. But if you're invisible, you are just totally free and you can just be. And that song is about, I was coming out of really deep, dark depression. And it was just really hard for me to see my way out of it.
Mm.
And that was just kind of like a mantra, if you will, that I was repeating to myself. It's like, slow down, kamikaze. I'm like the fly that just wants to like go into the light, you know? I am so attracted to that light, but it will kill me if I go to it.
Step back from that window, your tunnel vision only gives you one point of view.
What is the light?
You know, just like the fly going into the light and then zapping itself dead. I don't know. I don't know what the light is. It just is nice and I want it. It's warmth. It's all consuming. It's like, it's just like, it's nice. It seems like it's maybe death. I think death. But you don't realize it's death. Maybe if you're a fly. Or maybe you do. I can't speak for the flies.
Well, it's maybe like just like being busy or being like occupied or being like, like having to be doing something at all times, you know, like we have to be like, I have to be purposeful. I have to be like making something. I have to be achieving something. I have to be impressing someone, you know.
It's a rat race.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, as a performer, that's always one of those things where you're like, can I do this without the relentless need of approval?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Like can I not take it personally if the crowd is either not paying attention or not there or like,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, I've been in band since I was in seventh grade. It's still not easy to be like, why aren't they paying attention to how important this is?
Yeah, it's hard. And the music business is gnarly. And especially if you're an independent musician, you know? If you don't have a team, you're just kind of out there. It's a dog-eat-dog world. You know, nobody's going to look out for you. Everyone's trying to take advantage of you and pay you as little as possible. And it can feel very defeating at times.
Slow.
Was more, I think what really got to me was the dualities in this country and just like watching people just see everything as a black and white issue and watching like communities fall apart over stuff like the vaccine or like everything, you know, like all these different like cancel culture and all this type of stuff. It's just so sad and disgusting and like it's like a toxic sludge where people are just like projecting their worst of themselves onto each other and like tearing each other apart. And I guess I was going through a phase where I just like, I don't want to live in a world like this. I just don't want to be in a place like this. I would rather just be invisible and not be here and not participate because this is just too much for me. Nobody is compassionate or cares or has any like,
or there's plenty of people that care but they're not in power, or like they're not able to,
or they're not the loud ones,
make the decisions that affect the most people.
And also like the realization that hurt people, and so all these people that are hurt are hurting other people, and it's just like this never-ending disease that keeps giving. And it's hard to watch that just keep happening. You know, we didn't even have a sex education class. The class was called abstinence.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
At public school?
Yeah. Public school, Dry County, class is called abstinence. And we...
That was the, like, title of the class.
That's the title of the class.
Wow.
So we didn't really get, like, a good... My teachers were cool. Like, they tried, you know, but it wasn't... It's like the powers that be that say what are allowed to be taught, you know? And, you know, I'm from a place where they're like, you can't teach evolution here. You know, you have to teach the God thing about the creative design, which, don't get me wrong, it's a beautiful theory. But, like, come on. And... Abstinence was the name of the class, and kids just didn't have access to the information about birth control. And there was a kid in my seventh grade class, 12 years old, who was pregnant. And 12-year-old kid can't have a kid. I mean, they can physically, but that's not...
Jeez.
That kid doesn't have, like, it's not an adult yet. How can you bring a child into this world when you're 12 years old? You know, stuff like that happens. And then, like, until we have the proper education and access to birth control, not to mention... male birth control, which is a big thing in Japan, but they just don't let us have that over here.
Look, we're really afraid of the side effects for us, you know?
We're afraid headaches. Of something...
What if we get a headache?
With zero side effects. Anything could happen. But yeah, it's crazy. It's sad. And then, like, back to the whole thing, it's like you can't point your finger at the people when it's the powers that be that are kind of making the rules and making it oppressive for a lot of people.
And there's so many good people in these blood red states.
Sure.
That are just being stranded, or like, it's almost like they're being held hostage.
Yeah.
You know?
And then there are people that want to do good, and then instead of like looking up towards the powers that be, they just kind of look around to anybody that might vote red and be like, it's your fault, you know? And there's just a lot of that too. And that, I don't find that very helpful at all. Because I think all of us people that are the working class have a lot more in common than we think.
Yeah. When did you start playing music? How young?
I remember I started singing. I would lock myself in the bathroom when I was 3 years old and sing the same song over and over again.
You had to lock yourself to, like, keep it invisible?
Well, I wanted to be invisible. I always wanted to be invisible. Yeah.
The bathroom was the invisibility cloak.
Well, I had an interesting childhood. I my family was very, had a pretty dysfunctional family vibe. So I always wanted to be invisible. I always just wanted to escape. And I would just lock myself in the bathroom because that's, as Regina Spektor says, the truest room in the whole damn house.
I escape there frequently now as a new dad.
Yeah, it's the only place where you can lock yourself in there and no one's going to ask you any questions. Plus, the acoustics for a cappella singing are exceptional.
My wife's like, are you watching TikTok in there? I'm like, maybe.
Who cares? I'm invisible. You can't see
me.
She's
like, I see. But yeah, I mean, I think, well, singing feels like a superpower when you're a little kid in a way.
Oh, it does. I mean, it was the most amazing feeling. I would just sing for hours in the bathroom and it felt so good. And yeah. I mean,
were you in like choir or stuff in school?
I was in choir. Yeah, I was in choir. I was in band. I started playing the saxophone, alto sax, when I was 11. I was in the jazz band. I was very nerdy. But being in band in Arkansas is not as cool as being in band in New Orleans.
Mm.
I look at these kids, like, you'll see, if you go to the second line today, yeah, or if you go to any of the Mardi Gras parades, you'll see a lot of kids that are in marching band, and they're currently in, like, public school, and they're killing it. If you play tuba, like Joel's first instrument was tuba. If you play tuba in Arkansas as a kid, you are a nerd, you're a dork, get a life, get a clue. But if you play tuba in a band as a kid in New Orleans, you're a star.
Well, that's what I was telling my friends who are here with me in New Orleans. Like, if you watch these bands, the tuba sousaphone is the main heartbeat of the band. There's no bass. Sometimes you have maybe just a snare and some cymbals.
Well, the tuba is the bass.
This guy is leading the whole band. They don't start until he starts.
Yeah. He calls the tune. Or he, yeah, whoever. Tuba player calls the tunes. That's how it goes.
And there's been this whole thing about tuba theft in L.A., which is,
really?
I remember reading this L.A. Times article about it, because the mariachi bands need it.
Sure, that's big over there.
You know, marching bands, etc. And these things are big, expensive items.
Yeah.
That people in not affluent communities and high schools, they're not going to have these laying around.
No.
So all these rich kids schools in L.A. all of a sudden are missing their tubas. Like, they're just disappearing. There's like a black tuba market, you know?
Hey, what are you going to do? You know, yeah, they can afford to buy another one.
Did you look up to Lisa Simpson as a young sax player?
No, I did not. I didn't have it. You know, to be honest with you, I don't have the same background as most sax players do. I was never like that into the saxophone. And I didn't really watch The Simpsons. And I know that sounds bizarre. But when Joel and I were touring as Handmade Moments in Argentina, people would point to me on the streets and they'd be like, Lisa Simpson. And I'm like, what the heck? But no, I never really... I wasn't into really many sax players. These days, I'm more into the clarinet. I do love the saxophone.
The bass clarinet?
I play bass clarinet. But I also just play the regular small clarinet for fun. I don't really perform with it at all. I actually took it on tour with my friend John Craigie in November, and that was my first time performing with, like, a clarinet, like a small clarinet, but I just like to jam with
it. Well, ladies playing, you know, woodwinds and leading the band, like Lizzo, it's very in right now.
Yeah.
It's all the rage.
Have you seen Doreen Ketchum's?
No.
She's on Royal Street. She's an incredible clarinet player and vocalist.
Oh.
Her band is fire.
I think maybe we passed her.
They might be out right now, actually.
Older lady?
Yeah, sits down and plays clarinet.
Yeah, we actually watched her for a little bit yesterday.
She shreds.
Yeah. Well, there's a fun video if folks want to check out of you guys playing the song called President Trump.
Oh, yeah.
In a cave.
So that song is going to be on the next record. We're about to, Handmade Moments is about to release a record in May, and it's called End of the Wars. It's an anti-war album, but that song has been changed. That the name is now Fear for President. We changed the name. I should change the YouTube video too.
yeah, it's frustrating how that sack of meat that was our president keeps inserting himself in so many conversations. He's not even in office anymore. It's right. Like he's just like this hovering evil spirit almost that's like always there that like we can't get away from in sure. a way, you know.
I think the scariest part about Trump is that he had such a powerful way of getting people to band together and be afraid or hateful towards other people, which is, this to me, the most terrifying part. Because if you actually look at what Trump did in office, Obama started more wars, sent off more drones, all that kind of stuff. And so is Biden. Like, Biden's a big war guy. Obama was a big war guy. Trump actually didn't have as many people die from American bombs under his presidency. But what he did do that was really scary is, like, get people all riled up and hateful against minorities. And Trump was a lot of talk, but his talk was really dangerous. And that was really scary, like the insurrection and those types of things. And anytime people band together in fear and like project hate on another group of people is a terrifying thing. I mean, look at the Holocaust. It's awful. But you see it happening on both sides. I feel like you see people just being afraid and then hateful towards people. And then thinking of those people as lesser humans.
Right.
You know, like saying that the people coming across the borders are all evil, rapist, killers. Like, that's a very dangerous thing to say and get people to believe.
I mean, do you feel as a songwriter, as a performer, that, like, we have some sort of responsibility to change people's minds? Or is that, like, a hopeless endeavor?
I mean, I don't necessarily think it's my responsibility to change people's minds. But I do feel like whatever I create will reflect the times that we're going through. And, you know, I do write a lot of political songs, and I write about what's going on. And, yeah, I don't necessarily feel like it's my responsibility. Like, some artists only write love songs. Some artists, you know, don't write about political stuff, and more power to them, because it can be crushing, it can be daunting, and it can be polarizing. But for me, it's like, you know, I've always been a big activist. Me and Joel, you know, we're from Arkansas, and we met when we were 18 years old in college. And in Arkansas, there's a lot of big factory farm chicken farms like Tyson, and there's a lot of natural gas fracking. And these types of things happening. And Joel and I were getting really involved in, like, protests and stuff when we were really young, and kind of seeing how, like, the big mega churches, for example, in Conway, the town that we went to college in, like, one of the youth pastors at this mega church was also, like, a CEO of this oil company in Texas. Oof. And there's just so many different, like, ways of, like, brainwashing groups of people. And anyway, I've been involved in this type of stuff for a long time, but the older I get, the more I realize how important it is to make sure that we're not being so polarizing, because there are good people all over, and I just want to talk about the themes, like, end the wars. As much as like I hear people around me being like, calling people Trumpers, it's sad to me, because, like, I don't want to alienate those people. I want them to, more than anything, like, hear me, and I want to reach out to them and, like, hear. I want us all to hear each other. Like, why not? You know, instead of being on a foundation of fear and hate, how about just, like, hanging out and finding some common ground and realizing that we're all getting the shaft when it comes to, like, this capitalist economy that's slowly crashing and burning, and our centralized food system is falling apart, and we're all being poisoned by the same shit, you know?
How has New Orleans maybe changed you, or do you feel like there's something about New Orleans since you've been here that obviously it's like nowhere else in this country?
Sure.
But, like, what is something about New Orleans that maybe people don't know that really affects you?
There's a very humble nature here. I don't know why. or what, but I have my theories. Like, maybe all the hurricanes and just constant destructive events that have happened here make people really band together. There's a sense of community that's really strong here that I really love, and it's really sweet to be a part of. Less self-righteousness. There's a lot of self-righteousness all over the place because there's a lot of problems. But people, a lot of times people will be like, their way of fixing the problems is to do the, what do they call it, virtue signaling on the internet or whatever. There's a lot less of that here. Just people like showing up in the community and like being themselves, which is cool. And, you know, there's not a lot to be self-righteous about here.
There's a lot of talent.
There's a lot of talent, but there's not a lot of money to be made. There's not a, like, you know, like, I don't know. There's a lot of talent for sure. And at the end of the day, people are just people. And I think that that's what you realize at the end of a hurricane, you know, like when you don't have power for 3 weeks and people are just showing up to get a bucket of ice so that they can have groceries and, gasoline to run their generators. Just like, it doesn't matter how talented you are, we're all in the same.
Yeah. But I'm always struck at the crazy swing between the joy that the second line culture and the music culture here, that it's everywhere.
Yeah. Right?
And that people are coming here to celebrate. That's why I'm here. It's like we're here to like celebrate our friend who's turning 40. And it's like, and we're here to like just sort of let loose and enjoy. And then you walk outside your little house and there's plaques about, oh yeah, this is where the slaves were traded, like in this little patch of grass. This is where, you know, that movie 12 Years a Slave, it's like, this is where this all sort of began. And like that history is like everywhere in the South.
Yeah,
but especially in New Orleans. I mean, this was like the epicenter of the slave trade.
This was the very first slave port in the South. And arguably where most American music comes from is from here.
Yeah.
There's a movement around town to call music with like jazz blues roots Black American music, because it does come from all, like, the slaves that were brought here were from all these different countries in Africa. And they, you know, they were here and like, and then mixed with the indigenous people, and just all the different people that were here is where the roots of all music that we know in America come from.
Well, the true American art form that's sort of is now obviously gone viral in a way. You know, it's like the whole world has to like experience jazz and blues and rock and roll. It all comes from this one little, you know, port town.
Yeah.
You know?
And then it's taken its own, you know, it's like moved to other places and like grown into different things, but it all stems from this one area. And yeah, it is wild that so much pain and suffering in this place, also there's so much joy and beauty. And yeah, it's really incredible. I love that about the second line. The second line is such a beautiful, event. Joel plays a lot of, when we're not on tour, his Handmade Moments, he plays in a lot of brass bands. He plays tuba in a bunch of brass bands, and he'll play a lot of second lines for funerals, for birthday parties, for graduations, for weddings. And it's just such an interesting concept and a beautiful concept of like shepherding people through this phase of life with music. And especially the funerals, where you're like, okay, this person has passed. They're no longer on the earthly plane. We're going to play these songs for them to get them into the spirit world. Or, you know, that's just my understanding of it. But it's so beautiful and so emotional and so powerful. And you just see people like dancing and crying and totally like losing control of their bodies. And it's just very, it's very cathartic.
Yeah, I mean, our group, Dust Bowl Revival, has always sort of played New Orleans music as part of our show. But, you know, I'm from Chicago. I didn't grow up listening to this music. I just sort of discovered it and fell in love with it. And we would do this thing at the end of shows, and we still do sometimes, where we'd go out in the audience and we'd play something they can sing along to, Down by the Riverside, you know. And our horn players used to start playing A Closer Walk with Thee. I didn't even know what that song was. I was like, oh yeah, like this is a fun thing that we do at the end of shows. And then like I realized like, oh yeah, that's like the funeral song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, is that an inappropriate thing to play at the end of shows? I mean, it felt so good, but it was like, I was like, is this the funeral of the show? Like, it's the end of the show?
Yeah.
Does it kind of make sense?
Oh, you it's know? Beautiful. I think the melody is just so incredible, too. Has changed me about living in New Orleans is how I view like religious songs and spiritual songs, gospel songs, because where I'm from in Arkansas, you know, I had a different outlook on religion. As I was saying earlier, there's lots of mega churches. There's a lot of money tied in with church,
mm-hmm.
and just like kind of pretentiousness and in places where I'm from in Arkansas, like the people at the church don't like poor people, you know, like that's a vibe that you get and you're like, ugh. And like, there's this sense of like self-righteousness that is just not attractive. But then coming to New Orleans and experiencing like these spiritual songs and different spiritual practices here, it's just really beautiful. And it's opened me up to be more accepting. The older I get, the less attached I am to any type of ideal. I'm like, you know what? Everybody's right. Everybody's right a little bit, you know? They're just trying to find their way.
I mean, do you believe in that sort of past life situation where, like, maybe you were someone else in another time?
Sure.
And that's maybe why. I mean, I can't explain why, like, Mahalia Jackson moves me so much. Like, why would this move me this much?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like something real deep.
Of course.
You know, where like, this is something that you need.
I do. But that's a new thing for me. If you want to tie it back into the original thing you asked me, I would say that Jesus is the OG big dick energy.
You heard it here first, folks.
We need more people like that in the world. Yeah. But I hear you. When I came to the first Sunday Second Line, which is going to happen soon.
Yeah, we're going to go there with you.
The first time I went to Sunday Second Line, I was just bawling my eyes out.
Mm.
I was just crying. And there was the sense of like, wow, there are so many, like, all the spirits that have passed are here for this. Like, we're all, it's just kind of like a river of like everything that has ever been all happening at once. And it's like the physical way to visit that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like a visitation of like all the spirits that have ever been. And these songs are so old and have existed here. And this tradition is so like beautiful. And yeah, but to answer your question, I don't know. I don't have any rigid ideas about what happens after we die or past lives. I'm open to everything. The older I get, the more I realize, the less I know, you know, I just don't know anything. So anybody could be right, you know, there's nothing to disprove past lives.
Last thing I'll ask you, since this is our first ever interview in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and there's probably about 50 ghost tours happening on various streets as we were walking around last night, have you encountered any sort of spirit or ghost since you've been here in New Orleans? And my young daughter, I think, is very aware that something is in our little house off Frenchman Street, because she keeps, like, popping up and, like, pointing at, like, the corner of the room.
Oh, yeah.
And last night, I woke up. No, this morning, I heard specifically in my dream someone going, help.
Oh.
Not screaming, not, like, almost, like, telling me to help her, or, like, mm-hmm. saying, help her, you know?
Mm-hmm. And your daughter.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this. At first, I thought it was my wife. And then I looked over. She's dead asleep. And the baby, as soon as I heard that, went, ah! and pointed at the ceiling, like pointed at the corner of the room. It was like an instantaneous, like she heard it.
Did you see anything?
No.
Interesting.
But I think she might.
I think little kids and babies have a keener sense of like the spirit world because they're way closer to it.
Yeah.
They just came from that, you know. But I've never seen a ghost. I've experienced a lot of like wild stuff down here. Like, you know, very random occurrences that are like, well, that's crazy. But I've never seen like a ghost.
Such as?
Oh, gosh, now I'm on the spot. I can't really. Like, okay, for example, my house that we're at right now. I feel like Louis Armstrong has always had like a really big impact on me. When I was a little kid and I heard his voice, I just like felt so much emotion through my entire body. Like his voice is like a warm hug. Mm-hmm. There's nothing quite like Louis Armstrong. He's just like, wow. And I remember always feeling this way ever since I was like a little kid. And when I was in college, I was working at this restaurant in downtown Little Rock, Arkansas. And I would have like a 20-minute commute every day. And I was listening to Louis Armstrong in my car. I was listening to the song, When It's Sleepy Time Down South. And I was going 70 miles per hour on the interstate. And the car in front of me swerved. And I'm like, why are they swerving? And then as soon as they get out of the way, I realized because there's a tractor tire in the middle of the road. And I'm in like a low car. So then I swerved. And I lost control of my vehicle. And I spun around on the interstate like 3 times, and I was able to slow down and stop. Thankfully, I didn't crash, but it was terrifying. It was like being in a video game where I'm just like, I'm just trying to get control of the car. And then as soon as I pulled over and I was just like, Louis' voice was still there, like, when it's sleepy time down south. And so many times in life, like when I hear that song, something's happening. Well, when Joel and I we're on the road. We lived in a van for like 6 years, just traveling and playing music because we were so busy playing shows that it didn't make sense to pay rent anyway.
Right.
And then finally, we just gotten off this 22-show run with Yonder Mountain String Band that ended in Key West, Florida. And our goal was to drive straight to New Orleans and find a place to live because I needed to not be living in a van anymore.
Yeah.
So we drove here to New Orleans, crashed with a friend for like 6 days and looked for places to live, and we're just constantly looking. And it was a little stressful because it was around Mardi Gras. And then finally we found this house that we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to get this house because the landlords were going through a third party and it was Mardi Gras and they're like, we don't know.
Well, the location's also incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. But they're like, give us time. And we're like, we don't have time. We need to know now.
Yeah.
So we'll do anything. Just like get us in here. We just want to live here. So then we parked our Astro van in front of the house. And we're waiting on the third party lady to come show us the house. And then when it's sleepy time down south comes on WWOZ. And I was like, we're going to live here.
Yeah.
We're going to live at this house.
The patron saint of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Is singing to us.
And then, sure enough, it all worked out. But I've never had, like, a negative ghostly experience. It's always been very positive.
Yeah, I always feel like ghosts get a bad rap.
Sure. Yeah. I do, too. And I don't quite understand, you know, ghosts, like, spirits, whether they're stuck in the physical realm. I don't understand it exactly. I just...
Whereas my dad likes to say, if there are so many ghosts that people see, why aren't people seeing dinosaur ghosts?
Yeah, what the heck?
They were everywhere. Where are the dino ghosts?
Well, is that kind of like chickens?
Where are the chicken ghosts?
Where's the chicken? The poultry geists.
Oh, there you go. That's your new band name. Well, I appreciate you making the time to be on here. And, you know, it's always special for me to be in New Orleans. I'd love to spend more time here if possible. So
yeah, you got to come back.
Yeah, of course. And I'm sure our bands will be at some festival together soon.
Yeah.
Who knows where?
I think so. I really do.
If you haven't listened to Big Dick Energy yet, stop what you're doing. Go do that right now.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
When it's sleepy time down south, yes, the south wind blowing through the pinewood trees. The folks down there live a life of ease.
There she goes, Anna Moss, everybody. You can go to annamossmusic.com for her various projects that she's in. She'll be playing at Tipitina's right in New Orleans April 27th with Anders Osborne and making an appearance at Jazz Fest in New Orleans May 6th. Her duo with Joel, Handmade Moments, will be playing in Washington, D.C. in May and Cumberland, Maryland at Dell Fest, going up to Strawberry Music Fest here in California May 27th, and much more. HandmadeMomentsMusic.net, and there's a new record coming from them in May. And where might your group Dust Bowl Revival be going coming up, you ask? Well, let me tell you, we are headed to the East Coast next week, starting March 22nd in Pittsburgh at Thunderbird Music Hall, then going to Lancaster's Telus 360, and then we will be heading to Washington, D.C. at the Hamilton, our favorite spot by the White House, on Friday, March 24th, playing a 1 p.m. Jamie Lee Curtis-approved matinee all-ages show at Ram's Head in Annapolis on the 25th, and finishing at Ardmore Music Hall outside Philly. As always, this show is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lupitin, and we'll be back with another episode from New Orleans. See you soon.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.